There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. 3 hours of sports chat coming your way between now and 6 o'clock. No Premier League action for you this weekend, as we are off on international. So we will keep you up to date with the scores from last night's games at the UEFA Nations League. There's also a whole host of games to look forward to later on today. So we'll have build-up ahead of those kickoffs. Cricket fans, you're well catered for. You've got India against the West Indies, England against Sri Lanka. If the rain eases off a little, that is, over in Sri Lanka, we'll bring you up to date with that one. ODI is underway as we speak. Super League Grand Final a little later on in proceedings for Rugby League fans, Rugby Union fans. Our attention turns to the Champions Cup as the big clubs in Europe do battle around Europe over the weekend. There's tennis over in Shanghai. We've got golf from the British Masters. And, of course, the continued fallout from the Conor Khabib fight over at UFC. Lot to look forward to, as always. Encouraging you to have your say. You can text us now on 4001. You can get in touch at Dubai Eye Sport, or get yourself down here to Barasti. The roof is off. It's a beautiful afternoon. A lot of people in. Good crowd down here at the moment. A lot of people looking forward to enjoying an afternoon, a lazy afternoon down here at Barasti. And, of course, keeping up to date with all the latest sports. So 4001, you can get in touch at Dubai Eye Sport at Barasti Beach, or get yourself down to Barasti.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
CBR's with us this afternoon. He's one of the esteemed Grill panellists today. I always get confused with the new names for cups as well. We long knew the best, the big cup in European rugby as the European Cup, as the Heineken Cup. It's now the Heineken Champions Cup. Yeah,
spot on, Tom. There's been a lot of questions being asked about that, and in fact, there's two tiers of competition: the Challenge Cup and the Champions Cup. And the Champions Cup are all the top flight sides that have made the qualifying for it, and of course, the Challenge Cup are those teams that did not. And of course, that all kicked off this weekend, Tom. Kicked off last night with the Pool 1 game between defending champions Leicester taking on Wasps, and Wasps' dreadful form continues. Leicester hammering them 52-3 last night, and in the other European Challenge Cup game, Sale Sharks beat Perpignan 41-24. We've got some fantastic fixtures up this afternoon, continuing in the Challenge Cup. What I can tell you is that Bath will be taking on Toulouse. That game kicks off at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Montpellier take on Edinburgh. Exeter Chiefs take on Munster. Ulster take on the Leicester Tigers. Scarlet take on Racing Metro. Just some local results from last night, Tom. Just keeping you in the loop with local rugby in the UAE. It's the West Asia Premiership. Dubai Exiles beat Dubai Eagles 46-12. Bahrain beat the Dragons 13-9. Abu Dhabi Harlequins beat the Hurricanes 31-21. What does that all mean? Exiles and Abu Dhabi Harlequins are top of the log in the West Asia Premiership.
We'll talk local rugby in just a little while. That is the voice of Carlos van Rosenfeld, a former UAE international rugby player in his own right. And also alongside us for the first time here on The Grill, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome former deputy sports editor, The Mail Online, now based here in the UAE. Sports journalist and broadcaster Matt Fortune's with us as well. Good to have you on board.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate your time. And I mean, we talked there about the Champions Cup and its ever-changing names. I'm still trying to get my head around the UEFA Nation. It's not the Nations Cup, it's the Nations League.
The UEFA Nations League, indeed. As long as you don't try me to explain exactly how it works, then we'll be fine. I can run through results, but the actual permutations of those results, I'm not entirely sure yet.
Well, let's get your thoughts on it, though, because there's been a lot of chat about it at the moment. Did UEFA need to bring this new system in? Is it a good aside? Is it good to break up Premier League season and other major seasons over in Europe?
I think there's a number of positives to it, but equally a number of negatives. You only need to look at some of the performances and the approaches of managers yesterday that suggest it really is just a bunch of glorified friendlies. And the fact that some bigger nations are actually playing friendlies when they don't have a UEFA Nations League game sort of goes against why they were trying to bring it in. But if you look further down the ladder, and I'm sure people aren't naturally excited by Azerbaijan versus the Faroe Islands, it does give those teams a chance to compete against teams alongside them rather than going to Germany, going to France, getting battered every single time they go out. So I think from that perspective, it's actually really quite positive. And England, if you look at someone like them, they have a chance to play against better teams. And when it's a project like Gareth Southgate is working on, there can be no negative from going all out against those bigger sides.
What about the sort of fallout from clubs? I mean, we obviously look forward to the return of the Premier League and all the drama that goes along with that. We've had our fair share recently as well. None more so than a certain Jose Mourinho, who would have thought that, you know, that second half comeback last weekend saved him, kept him in a job, certainly for a little longer. We don't know how much longer. But, you know, these breaks, these international breaks, are they a headache for managers?
Yeah, I think so. And that's the thing, what they were saying about Jose Mourinho is that actually if they had got rid of him, the new coach would have had 2 weeks to work with players. But then you look at the amount of players that would have not been within the club at that time. So it's incredibly frustrating. I don't think managers look forward to it at all. And of course, they always run the risk of players picking up injuries. Yeah. There can be no benefit in breaking the season up at this early stage so many times. And this is already the second international break. And it just seems a little bit like overkill.
For you, Carlos, are you a fan of this new Nations League format?
Well, I think the only thing it really does is, you know, as I said, struggling to understand exactly how it works, but I guess kind of getting international teams prepared again. And I think maybe it plays into the hands for a guy like Joachim Löw, which didn't experience a very, very good World Cup. A lot of questions being asked about him now. Michael Ballack coming out in the week saying he's very lucky to have kept his job. They should have sacked him. You know, it kind of gives him a bit of time to re-establish himself. They go play in the Netherlands this week. But to me personally, not a big fan of it. I'd rather prefer to watch the Premier League with Jose Mourinho and Guardiola and their dramas on the weekend. I find it a lot more exciting.
I like that point because I think for Germany, had they come back after the terrible World Cup and been up against a lesser team, with all due respect, there would have been nothing to raise them, and it would have been really difficult. They would have kind of maintained in this sticky spot a little while longer. As it is, they're up against France, fresh from their World Cup triumph, of course, and going to the Netherlands. I think that is really positive, and I agree with you that by having them pitched against those better sides, it helps them really kick on and forget anything that went before.
Well, I think a point you made during the week with Robbie as well as listening into that, I think it was a valid point in the sense that, you know, we don't need to see San Marino getting tramps every single week, do we, by some of the big guns. So be able to sort out some of the lesser, like, sort of the smaller countries when it comes to European football, and putting them like for like against similarly ranked teams is leveling that playing field to a certain degree. And I suppose the same would go for with some of the big teams. I mean, we're just having a look at the fixtures today, and one of the big ones that jumps off the page is Netherlands against Germany. That's what Germany need at the moment, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And you think that it's for them to come back into a big high octane experience, and especially the Dutch as well, it also gives teams that were struggling or were overperforming, it gives them something to aim at. Because if you look at the second tier of teams, your likes of your Serbias and things like that would always be pushing maybe for qualification but struggling, they have something to aim for. They can get promoted, sure, it's only after a mini round robin. And the same, those smaller nations have the chance to make a big step up and play against the slightly bigger, better sides, your Wales, your Republic of Ireland, and I think it's really encouraging.
Netherlands against Germany is just one of a number of games that's kicking off a little later on in the UEFA Nations League. We'll begin, give you the rundown on all of those games, and of course have a look back at last night's results after this.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We'll look back at some of the results from the UEFA Nations League in just a few moments' time. Let's just run through the fixtures, though, that you can look forward to throughout the afternoon into the evening as well. Staggered starts for a number of these games. From Group A1 all the way down to Group B4. Make of that what you will. Which are the big games that jump off the page for you, Matt?
Well, as we touched on already, just to go back to that, just reminds me of Battleships.
A1, you got me.
So the games are kind of to look forward to. We touched there obviously on the Netherlands v Germany. You've also got Ireland-Denmark, which is an intriguing game. Ireland going very much in the wrong direction. They were beaten by the Danes 5-1 in the World Cup qualifier late last year. Denmark, though, without Christian Eriksen there, there are not many teams so built around one player as the Danes. Yeah. Without them, they really, really struggle for goals. They haven't got anyone in their squad that has scored more than 5 international goals. So it's tricky, but then you look at the Irish setup, there's nothing but bad blood coming out of that camp. You look at the dynamic around Roy Keane. Martin O'Neill feels like maybe is needs to either develop his management style, which at his age is probably going to be a bit tricky. They're not getting good players coming through. You look at the likes of Declan Rice, who they really missed an opportunity with there, excelling for West Ham United, now had his head turned by England and the opportunity for that. And that says to me that there's bad management right at the top, because you need to be identifying the best players and making sure that they're playing for you if indeed that is possible. So that's an interesting one to watch. Probably not the highest quality. I'm pretty sure there's going to be very few goals in that. But just from an interest perspective, that'll be interesting. And then looking ahead, really, you're further down the list. There's not masses to look forward to. But early next week, of course, you've got Spain v England, France, Germany, and then Ireland, Wales. I think there's a lot of... That's what makes this UEFA Nations League interesting, is that you can just put a little bit of interest onto those games because of the competitive nature of them.
Just want to get your thoughts on that, both of your thoughts actually, because off air we were talking about the dearth talent coming through from the Netherlands in recent times as well. We'll see, you know, all of us love our football, and you'd think that you'd be able to name at least a handful of the players turning out for the Netherlands a little later on, but a number of new faces in there, a number of unknown qualities and quantities. You've just been talking about Ireland there as well, again with that rich history of great players coming through the system, through the ranks as well. Going through problems at the moment. Is this a problem at the moment, or is this just a bad time for the likes of the Netherlands and Republic of Ireland?
Well, I think it proves the value. You have to have long-term vision internationally, and you look at the Germans. It was the execution of the German model, from absolute humiliation at the hands of England 2002, I believe it was, and then they had their own World Cup in 2006, and they didn't think, oh, we're having our own World Cup, we're going to go out and win it. They put the foundations in place, they unified the approach to youth training, and you now look at them, the young players keep on filtering through. They win the World Cup 4 years ago, nearly 5 years ago now, but that was always the project, and it was specifically built towards that. They took 2010 as a little bit, and it was work your way through. I just don't think there's smart enough thinking at the top of some of these countries. And you look at England, actually I think there is smart thinking now there. There's a very set process. They have their own base. Famously, you look at Clairefontaine in France. England now has their St. George's Park. And it's a proper place with proper thinking, and players not built, picked on reputation, picked on the fact that they fit a system the international team is trying to do. And that's what you really need. It's not just your man 1 to 11. It's making sure those processes are in place.
England were in action yesterday over in Croatia, in what has to be one of the most bizarre games I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, for those that weren't aware of this one, Matt, I mean, when was the decision taken? Why were they playing behind closed doors?
So this dates back to 2015, and a game which does not shine a very positive light on Croatian football fans, also being played behind closed doors following sanctions for racist chanting during a game against Italy. And on the pitch, somebody somewhere had... moan a Nazi swastika into the pitch. I mean, it beggars belief. It's absolutely staggering, and rightly so. There have been sanctions. Perhaps FIFA, UEFA, whoever it was that made the call, could have moved a little bit quicker, because as we were discussing, they announced this maybe 3 months ago, that this game would be behind closed doors, by which time the draw had already been made. And anybody watching England yesterday would have seen a small pocket of England fans. Absolutely spectacular. I mean, you have to take your hat off for their commitment making that journey. They even moved the game around. I can't remember the distance. I think it's about 4.5 hour taxi journey from the capital, Zagreb, which is the only place you can fly to properly from the UK. They moved it to prevent these guys going, and they still made the journey, which is absolutely superb. Sat up on a hill. I was actually reading Daniel Taylor's match report in The Guardian overnight, and he said there was a scene where Jordan Pickford was keeper, keeper, give us a wave, and he could hear it, but he wasn't entirely sure where it was coming from, so he just tentatively waved a glove in the general direction. It was a very, as you touched on there, what a bizarre atmosphere to play in. It was the first time ever in England's history, so 146 years of playing international football, that it's ever happened to them, and I think the performance kind of bore that out, really.
We'll get on to that performance just in a few moments' time. Let's hear from the manager first off, shall we? Gareth Southgate spoke about this bizarre game after the game.
To be honest, when I'm on the bench, I'm just engrossed in the game, so it doesn't actually make a lot of difference to me. What I would say is I thought the application of the players, given that it has to be strange for them to be able to, you know, everybody here has performed, and you want to perform in front of a crowd, it raises the level of the game. But I thought our players were really good.
Did they do all that you asked of them then tonight?
Yeah, I think we defended really well, we pressed well. I thought our build-up play was good. First half was fairly even, we had a great chance from the corner. One little bit of sloppy play where they had a chance from a cutback. I think second half we were by far the better team, and if we'd been a little bit more ruthless with our chances, we should have won the game.
What about the new boys? Chilwell from the start, Sancho from the bench?
Yeah, both very good. Ben, I thought, was excellent. His defending was composed. You know, he had some very good players up against him. Didn't dive in. His use of the ball was excellent. Good energy getting forward. So, not easy in the final third to produce really high quality, you know, keeping your feet. But I thought he should be very proud of his performance. And Jaden had a good impact when he came on.
Gareth, tonight it was a back four talk of, you know, changing from the back three. It was so successful in the summer. Was there more to it than just going to a back four? Because watching from the stand, it looked like in possession it was a back three. Eric Dyer dropping in between the centre backs and defensively going to a back four. Was that the idea?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we've had success building with the three, and with Eric in that position, it's perfect for him to drop in. So that at times was the idea. We there were other times where John and Harry just built the game themselves, and Eric was a little bit more advanced, but meant we could get our fullbacks on a bit higher, and so it's good to have that option. But definitely without the ball, it meant we were able to press higher and get closer to their midfield.
Going forward now, I'm interested in your interview before the game. I was thinking maybe the switch tonight may be on the back of actually playing Croatia in the semi-final. Maybe the problems they give us in the wide positions. But is this something that you're going to stick to going forward, or is it a case of that you think we can just be flexible and play a back three sometimes when we get together and a back four?
Well, it's good. I don't think you should ever be rigid and say that's what we're doing and we stick with it regardless. I've wanted to look at a four after the last few games where without the ball we've suffered a little bit because of the shape, and when I look at some of the young players that are coming through, then there's wide players, number eights that might suit that system. So I think we've got to have an open mind to it, but tonight I thought the players did, you know, executed it really well.
I just wonder though, Gareth, what was the tipping point? Because when you and I spoke before the Spain game, it was very much, this is the way we are going to play, this is the way we have been playing, we just have to get better at it. So did something in those two games happen for you to change your view on it?
Well, I think what we didn't want to do was have had such a long time working together in the summer, get back together and then change everything straight away. But what we felt in the two matches with Spain and Switzerland in the first half, out of possession, we were having to cover too much ground, and both teams pinned our five back with three, and we were getting outnumbered in midfield and then further forward as well. So also availability of personnel affects that. And I think at the beginning with the likes of Maguire, when they hadn't played as much international football, to play with the five was helpful to help them bed in. Now he's established, and John as well, and they look more than capable tonight of playing in the four.
You had seven in this squad, or you have seven in this squad, 21 or under. We've seen a couple of those this evening, but is there a desire perhaps even on Monday, or at what stage would you like to start betting some of these into the team rather than just in the squad?
Well, we can't get too much younger. we obviously,
but they're not here just for the ride, those
No,
youngsters.
No. Well, you know, that's why we started Chilwell, who did really well. You know, we have to remember Marcus is still a very young player, and Jaden, we had no hesitation in putting him on. We lose John, and we lose Hendo for the game on Monday with suspension, so clearly there's going to be opportunity for others as well.
Apart from those two, would it be your desire to play as strong a side as possible against Spain?
Yeah, we're going to play Spain in Seville in front of 60,000 people. We want to be as competitive as we can in every game, and was different with the friendly last month against Switzerland, but In these games, I think we've got to pick a team that represents the country in the way we should.
You haven't had any calls from club managers saying, please just use them for one game or the other?
No. I mean, look, when I can help with the clubs, I do. And we make sure that the training load is right so that we don't overburden players with that. And equally, you know, around the friendly matches, then, you know, we can be a bit more sensible. But for these two games, it's a lot more difficult, and we don't have the squad. And I think as well, other players are going back around the world to play, and I'm sure they'll be playing every game. So it gets highlighted more with our team because we're in England, and all the clubs, all the players are playing in England, but most players that go back to South America and play and go to Africa and play, that they play every game.
Now, I know you're engrossed in what was going on from the sidelines there, but were you aware of the Bank of England fans that are up on the top of the hill there?
little bits, but...
they asked you to wave at one point.
Right, okay, well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm just in the middle of the game, and if you get distracted by anything in the stand, then it affects your thinking, so... Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. So many of our fans have been to every game for the last 10 years, so it's such a shame that a lot of them haven't been able to get to this one. But I know we're taking a lot to Seville, so we've got to make sure our performance is very good.
Just like Gareth Southgate, the more and more I hear him, he's grown on me. He really has grown on me.
I really wanted to say exactly the same thing as I was listening. Utterly engrossed, because I'm so tired of football managers just speaking in platitudes. And while Gareth is saying very safe stuff, it's actually very interesting, yeah. And you really want to listen to it, and you really want to believe in it. Maybe that's a little bit of the underdog thing, because he's not a marquee name when he took that job. But I exactly the same as you. I thought, what a really nice chap.
Yeah, and there was no waistcoat last night as well. He's obviously letting himself go now, you know, playing without any inhibitions, that's for sure. Let's talk about a few of the points that he brought up there. Fascinating watching this game, apart from the weird atmosphere with it being played behind closed doors. But the fact that, you know, he feels the confidence against somebody who made it through to the World Cup finals, to put on the likes of Chilwell, to bring on the likes of Sancho, shows a strength and depth, but also his investment in the youth.
Yeah, and while we were saying that we were very impressed with a lot of what he was saying, you look at the likes of Mason Mount, who was on the bench, the Derby County midfielder on loan from Chelsea. With the greatest respect, of course, he's not ready for top international football just yet. He's still playing in the Championship. So to a certain degree, I think he's doing the right thing by bringing those young players in. And I think he's managed the squad that he had brilliantly well. He saw yesterday that Kieran Trippier, who was England's best player at the World Cup, was not in the starting lineup. Personally, I agree with that. I think Kyle Walker is far better getting forward, and as Southgate touched on there, with Eric Deer dropping in and splitting the back two and allowing those fullbacks to push on a little bit more, I do think Kyle Walker would be better for that spot. But Trippier started the first game after the World Cup, and had Southgate ripped everything up and gone back to square one and thought, now we'll move forward, kind of rushed it, it wouldn't have worked the same. So he's doing exactly the right thing, I think, with those players.
Ross Barkley, a lot of chat about him back in the England fold, back in the starting 11 as well. He didn't have a great game last night.
I was looking at that England team, and the three in the middle and three up top would suggest a little bit of a attacking ambition. But then you look at the two, you look at Dyer and Henderson, and then you look at Barkley. Barkley's hardly a creative 10. He's not going to be linking very well with Kane or playing the balls out wide properly to the wide men. At Chelsea, he does very, very well because he has Eden Hazard alongside him. Yeah. And you're looking at two or three defenders concentrating on the Belgian because he's that brilliant. England don't have a player of that ilk. So Barkley, I think, when he hasn't got that extra little bit of time, and to be fair to him, he had a bad injury. He struggled at Chelsea at the beginning. So he is slowly making those steps forward, and I do think he's certainly one that England should persevere with, but you're still looking for that lack of quality coming from midfield England, a little bit of creativity, unlocking that pass, and that's what's really missing.
He's going to have to obviously make a couple of decisions midweek because he's losing a couple of players for that Spain game later on in the week. Stones, Henderson, both out of the equation. Who do you bring in?
Oh, God, that's a good question. It would be interesting. I think, again, you're struggling. It's Spain. You don't want to be... it's not the sort of play to test somebody in. I think what he'll do, he'll play it very safe. I'm going to second-guess who the players will be, but I don't think he'll deviate too much from the formation. I think it will remain very, very defensive. I expect Deer to keep his place, despite... I really don't fancy him much as a holding midfielder at all. And Henderson has his critics, but... That kind of, it's the metronome, I believe they call it, the role Jorginho plays for Chelsea, just keeping things ticking over, getting it, giving it. You need someone like that in there, and I don't think England have a replacement. I think it'll be really tough against Spain.
So the England get their point against their opposition yesterday in what was a memorable game for all the wrong reasons, really. Not the scoreline, the fact that there was no... I love the fact as well, somebody came out, I can't remember who it was afterwards, saying... Why on earth did they have the stadium announcer was still there, wasn't it? Yeah. It's like, what's the point?
Well, I tell you, you got a contract for the season, Tom.
It was the same match report I read, the Daniel Taylor match report, said the stadium announcer wished everybody a safe travel home. And I thought, fair play. If he's on script, I guess. So, but a small thought for Ben Chilwell and for Jadon Sancho. Your international debut.
Yeah.
You almost don't want to take it because that's supposed to be a real magical time in your professional career, right? And there you are in front of an old man and his dog in the back and beyonds of Croatia. It's not the most memorable experience.
Let's hear from England's captain, shall we? Harry Kane. Came close. Couple of shots on target. Couple of near misses as well. But no goals for Captain Kane.
Yeah, it was a strange one. Obviously, no one's used to playing with no fans. So I thought we dealt with it well. It's hard without the atmosphere. But I thought we played well. First half, probably an even game. I thought second half, we really come into it. Created some good chances. And if it was a bit more clinical, we'd have won the game.
When does it really sort of strike home how strange it is and that no fans are going to be coming? Is it 20 minutes before kick-off and it feels like almost a warm-up or a day at training?
I think when you're walking out and then the national anthem and things like that, you're standing there singing it to no one, really. So, at the start of the game, it was just weird. It's a weird atmosphere, but I guess it's an experience. Hopefully we don't have to experience too many times in our careers, but I thought we dealt with it well.
There were 20 or 30 England fans on the hill. I'm sure you could hear them.
Yeah, we heard them. We appreciate the support, even when no fans are allowed in the stadium. So, great for them to be on top and support us.
How did you think the change of formation worked?
Yeah, I thought it worked well. I think it definitely helps us without the ball, putting bodies around the pitch, matching up against them more. They're a good side and they try and play. So I thought we'd done well. Like I said, second half especially, we got into it more. The pitch was tough. It was a tough, bobbly pitch. So we created some good chances. One off the bar, one off the post in the first half. And Marcus had a couple that I'm sure he'll take on another day.
You were furious with the header as well, weren't you? I think when it left your head, you thought it was going in.
Yeah, just one of them. Great ball by Jordan. Just tried to head it back across goal and just didn't get enough dip on it. And yeah, sometimes I hit the bar and go in, but this one didn't. So it was one of them games for us. But we're happy with the way we dealt with the whole scenario.
Word on Jadon Sancho. You've obviously had a few days training with him as well. How exciting a prospect does he look to you?
Yeah, no, he's great. Big congrats to him for his debut today. I thought he'd come on and made an impact as well. So he's been great in training. For him, he knows he's sort of carry on working hard, carry on playing games. I'm sure he'll have a very bright future.
So the thoughts of Captain Kane, Harry Kane, no goals. No, I mean, they get their point. They were away from home. They're playing against a World Cup finalist. Got to be happy with that point to a certain degree. But this lack of goals that we've seen from England at the UEFA Nations League, in contrast to what we saw of them at the World Cup a couple of weeks before that, is that a concern?
Absolutely, and I think that the biggest concern of all of that is Harry Kane has now not scored in 6 England games. That is the longest that he's gone without scoring since he made his competitive debut, and you look at it, it's carrying his club form into the international scene, and he's very clearly tired. And I think the thing with England is that when you play one man up top, and a man as prolific and with a formidable reputation and talent of Harry Kane, you need him to be performing to weigh in, because the other players are a support act, really. They're coming from wide. And I was doing a little bit of digging, mostly because I'm absolutely furious with him regarding my fantasy football team, because I brought him in after his Huddersfield 2 goals and then he did absolutely zero. But he's having 3 shots fewer per game for Spurs. And that's a real concern if he's not getting in the positions. It's not just that he's missing chances. And he did have a couple of chances yesterday. It was a good header that hit the post. But he's not even getting in the positions to have the shots on goal. And that, when your number one man, your leading man, is not doing well and getting in those opportunities, the team behind are always going to struggle.
Keep thoughts coming in. 4001, if you'd like to send us your opinions. We've spoken a lot about England, haven't really spoken a huge amount about Croatia. Do we expect more of Croatia from this game?
Well, it's a massive step forward after their beating from Spain in the previous game. They were battered 6-0. They've lost some key players. Mandzukic, who of course scored the winning goal against England in the World Cup semi-final, he's retired. They were without their 2 first-choice fullbacks, but they're a wonderful side. After all, they've got the best player in the world at the moment in Luka Modric. They've got some excellent players coming through. We ever expect them to quite be, well, no, maybe that's unfair. I don't expect them to be as good as they were in the World Cup. They may do as well, but I don't expect them to be as good because they are built around Luka Modric, and he's not coming to the end, but there's only a couple more. There's certainly not another World Cup in him yet, but I still expect them to cause problems. I don't expect them to go and get beat by Spain 6-0 again. I think that was a one-off, but I'd fancy England. You know, I think there's hope, definitely, and if you execute the plan properly and the players play to the best of their ability, there's definitely a chance.
One player who played to the best of his ability yesterday, had a good game in the England colours, was Eric Dier. He's had a good start to the season. He was instrumental in England's performance yesterday, but he did finish the game without a shirt. Why?
You better explain why you're wearing that pink bib.
I just didn't want to come on TV topless.
But you just swapped shirts with a big player.
Yeah, no, I played against him the other day as well. He's a fantastic player, so nice to change shirts, yeah.
But he didn't score one from 25 yards today.
Yeah, thankfully.
What was it like? Just a strange night all round, starting with this crowd or lack of it?
Yeah, strange. I think this is first experience of it for all of us, so strange atmosphere. I think there's a couple of England fans up there on the hill. But yeah, it's a very strange atmosphere. But once the game started, I think it just went to the back of our minds, really.
Could you hear those supporters up there on the hill?
Yeah, it's easy to hear them because they're
the only ones. Yeah. What about the change of formation, Eric? Did you find that suited you?
Yeah, I think it's a formation that suits me well. I think it works to all of my characteristics and. I think the team did well in it today. So I think it's important for us to have that flexibility and be able to play in different formations.
It really gives you a chance personally to push for a starting 11 place again, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm always going to give my best when I play and try and push for a place, no matter what the formation or the team selection. So that's the most important thing.
Think you'd scored?
Yeah, I thought so.
And even if it had bounced off a different way, it would have gone to a teammate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know. When I looked back at it, I thought it was going in, but it just seemed to skid it off the grass onto the post. So, yeah, it's unlucky and disappointing. Would have been great.
How quick and how good is Jadon Sancho? Just saw a few seconds of him there, but he looks quick for a start.
Yeah, no, I think he did. I think he was fantastic when he came on. He was very direct, confident. As you said, fast, technically very, very gifted, and hopefully he can be a big part of England in the future. He just needs to keep working hard and develop, and I'm sure he will be.
Well played, Eric. Thank you.
Thank you.
So England get the point against Croatia. That's about the other results. Group A2 saw Belgium win against Switzerland. That man Lukaku, no problems with him in front of goal at the moment, is there? Certainly for country, that is.
Yeah, and it comes back to the same problem that I was saying with Harry Kane leading the line for England. Romelu Lukaku doing it for Manchester United, or not doing it for Manchester United, and that's a foundation of their problems.
So a result for Belgium, they beat Switzerland 2-1. Croatia, as mentioned, England was 0-0. The other one, I suppose, that came as a bit of a surprise, certainly for fans of football back in the UK, Northern Ireland going down as well. They've had, again, sort of a rocky time of it after the highs, I suppose, of 6 to 9 months ago. Again, just not being able to hit their straps.
Yeah, and fading to kick on. I can't help but think that Michael O'Neill's head being not turned necessarily, being so heavily linked with the Scotland job when it became vacant. It's always difficult when wasn't very clear that he wanted it, but when you're given an opportunity to what would be a step up, I think, for him, and it not come through, I think it's very difficult to then realign your mind and get back to the crux of what you were doing so well in the first place. And again, the other thing that happens is that you kind of, when you've overperformed so much, you sort of lose the underdog tag a little bit, and that lack of surprise. You look at clubs in the Premier League that come up and have an amazing first season because people are a little bit shocked and unsure what to do with them, and then the second year they get found out. And I think Northern Ireland, they sort of came from zero, rocketed up through the rankings, performed really, really well, got some great results, flirted with the idea of qualifying with a major tournament, and then it's sort of fallen away. And I think they just need to freshen things up a bit, whether that's a new manager or a new direction, or whether it's just a little influx of new players, give somebody a little bit more life. Maybe that's the way that they can turn it around.
Quick mention as well for Brazil. They were in the region yesterday, taking on Saudi Arabia. Brazil running out as winners of that one. 2-0 for them And again, that's evidence, isn't it, of what you've been saying, this whole idea that this is a UEFA Nations League focused on the big teams, or all the teams over in Europe, but the opportunity being taken by international size to organise a couple of friendlies as well during these couple of weeks out.
Yeah, because you have those 2 weeks, and I think it's the Brazilian World Tour continues. I'd be fascinated to know the last time they actually played in Brazil. But yeah, there were some other interesting games around. Of course, in Africa, there was an African Nations Cup qualifier. The big story there, and cover your ears, Liverpool fans, is that Mo Salah limped off with what was described as not a big injury. We support him with all our energy, and we hope he'll return as soon as possible. That doesn't sound small to me. That sounds like a manager not entirely sure. And of course, you know, his form hasn't been great. The funny thing about that game is that he actually scored direct from a corner, something that I haven't seen for a very long time. So interesting news for Liverpool fans to keep an eye on. But yeah, you're right. It is good. We get a little bit Eurocentric with this kind of thing because it is the tournament that garners the most interest. They are the teams, they are the players that garner the most interest. But there is stuff ticking around always.
And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be round the grounds. Also want to spare a thought and a word for a certain Thierry Henry. Where's he off to? We'll find out next.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Get back to the football in just a few moments' time. We've got a result to bring to you, though. England have beaten Sri Lanka in the one-day series. England winning thanks to the Duckworth-Lewis method. They win by 31 runs. England scored 278 for 9 from their 50. Sri Lanka got 240 for the loss of 5 wickets before the heavens opened and the deluge came down. So that was it, an England win on the Duckworth-Lewis. And it thinks that over the next 4 to 5 weeks of Sri Lanka during the monsoon season, old Messrs Duckworth and Lewis might be called on quite a few times in the weeks to come.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And a lot of people are questioning why go down to Sri Lanka this time of year when you know what to expect from the weather. But a good victory for England. A lot of question being asked around the England bowlers, especially. You know, they were questioning a lot of spin bowling. Will they be able to react in the conditions? They have. They've answered a few critics, and I think it's going to be an interesting series down in Sri Lanka.
India have closed their latest day against West Indies. India trail went with the Windies by 3 runs with 6 wickets remaining. West Indies were 311 all out in their first innings. India are currently 308 for 4 at stumps today. We've got rugby coming away a little later on. Champions Cup action. What time does that get underway?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is that at 4 o'clock this afternoon, Bath will be taking on Toulouse. And at 6:15, we've got a few kickoffs. Montpellier take on Edinburgh. Exeter Chiefs take on Munster. And then our late kickoffs at 8:30 this evening, it's the Ulster Ravens taking on Leicester Tigers. And Scarlets taking on Racing Metro 92.
Been all sorts of managerial chat in the world of football over the last few days. John Terry making it very much known that's where he needs to or hopes to be heading to. And another one who's certainly been mentioned time and time again is Thierry Henry when he's not recording adverts for Sky or Renault or something like that. He has got himself a job. This is after a long-running rumour mill, which was doing the rounds. He's basically been linked with Monaco for quite some time now. Let's just try and paint the picture for you first.
Look, everybody loves a fairy tale, and so does Thierry Henry. It looks like he is going back to the club where he started his career back in 1994 as a player. That's what he looked like back in those days. He won the title with Monaco in 1997 under Jean Tigana. Nice. And it looks like he is going back. We are being told today his representatives in extremely advanced stage of talks. We're being told a deal has not been done yet, but both parties hopeful that a deal will be done in the next 48 hours. Right. Other managers Monaco have been looking at include Antonio Conte, the former Chelsea manager, of course, and also Marcelo Gallardo, who's doing a very, very good job with River Plate in Argentina. But our information is that Thierry Henry is almost certainly going to be the next Monaco manager, probably in the next 48 hours.
Well, it's happened sooner than that. That was overnight. Matt, we understand that it's a shoe-in now, isn't it?
It's done. It's been announced by the club, and it's an absolutely fascinating appointment for a number of reasons. Obviously, for the romantics, it's brilliant to see him go back there after so long away. But I'd like to consider myself maybe slightly more sensible than a hopeless romantic. I just think it's odd. This is a team who finished second in Liga last year, who won the title the year before that, who have beaten Manchester City in the Champions League. And they're giving it to a complete novice, a guy with only a few years of coaching in his back pocket. And I just can't see how it's going to work. They're a club that are now having a terrible, terrible time of it. You need someone that's going to go into a dressing room and have a familiar sense of what that feels like to be in a struggling team. Thierry Henry, bless him, and as an Arsenal fan, I absolutely adore him, has never really been in a struggling dressing room. And that is going to be a big, big ask for him. I think it's bizarre. I think the names that they were being linked to, Antonio Conte, would have been a far better fit for me. It's a great story, and obviously I wish him all the best. But it's interesting. The game I'll be looking forward to most will be Monaco-Nice, which is Vieira up against Thierry Henry, which will be absolutely fascinating. I can't wait for that one.
It's interesting, yeah, because he hasn't really, as you say, cut his teeth in a managerial role. We know he had a very sort of highly publicised role with Martinez for Belgium during the summer as well. But that's not really the learning ground, is it, for taking on a major club like this?
No, absolutely not. And also Roberto Martinez, as much as he has his strengths, is very much a manager that Thierry Henry would have liked to have played for, considering his complete negligence of a defensive defensive formation. So of course Thierry's done the right thing. He went back to Arsenal. He earned his badges the right way. He actually was given a choice. He was told to make a choice probably now 5 years ago between punditry and coaching, and it was, from an Arsenal fan's perspective, to see Arsene Wenger force Thierry Henry out of the club was very awkward. I don't think it certainly did the manager any favours. But Henry realised that punditry wasn't for him. He could have taken the easy gig, he could have taken that cushy sofa and probably coined in a fair bit of whack doing it for Sky. But he's going into the Lions then, and I think you have to take your hat off to him for that. But you just think that for the size of the job, for a club that are actually punching well below their weight, it's a very, very big ask. I think a safer pair of hands alongside him. Maybe he could be smart with his appointments. We don't know any further details of who will have alongside him. So if he gets that rock, that solid man alongside him, I think maybe it could work out, but it will be certainly interesting to one.
Bold move?
Very, very bold move. I think, you know, Thierry would have been better. There were links with him, of course, to Aston Villa. I think maybe that would have been a better way to kind of introduce himself. Tom, we know the expectations of Monaco. They've been in finals. They've won the Premiership. I personally, if I was Thierry Henry, I wouldn't have left the couch. I think it was much easier being a pundit than going into coaching. And as I say, I wish him the best of luck. He was a fantastic player, but I think he's really bitten off a lot.
But he's still involved with Belgium, isn't he?
I don't believe he was there over the last couple of games. No, I think he's been hammering out the details of those. But the players have been speaking very fondly of him. And it's interesting, and unfortunately, I've never... Well, as you know, tell a lie, I met him at a signing once upon a time, and I gave him a copy of the Invincibles book to sign, and he was pretty taken by that. I feel like we had a connection. I feel like we could have been pals if we'd spent more time together.
You could be the new assistant coach to Monaco, mate.
Well, this is the advert I'm putting out there. I'm hoping he's tuning in. A solid guy, knows about how to defend, etc. and so on.
Very nice job. You get a Renault as part of the package as well. So.
Stay in a lovely part of the world. Tax-free.
Actually, yeah, thinking about it, it's only the second best job in football after being a third choice goalkeeper, I think, which is the ultimate key. No, the players have been the Belgian players, and you would expect them to. They're not certainly going to come out and criticise him, but Thomas Meunier was saying some very nice things about him, about he was very interested in their personal side of things, in getting to know them and how he could maximise their performance through their personal life. So leaving the coaching side of things to Martinez. But as I said earlier, he's done all his badges, he's done the right thing, but it's just such a bold move.
I'm surprised, I'm personally surprised that he's turned his back on the media thing, because, you know, he's a guy that likes the limelight, he's a guy that's not shy of sharing a bit of opinions. He was very good in that sort of role as well. Sky had nurtured him for several years. We saw him sort of move away from the studio and do a lot more of the sort of promotion and the so he's commercially savvy. And I thought that the commercial savvy element and, of course, the brand that he is, I thought it was a perfect fit for him to continue with the media work. And I wonder if that's going to be a struggle for him now.
I completely agree. Being commercially savvy is not what you need when you're a manager dealing with highly paid footballers in difficult situations. You don't need somebody to just be magnanimous and straight and appeal to the masses. You need someone to go in there and be mean sometimes. You need them, especially players that are massively underachieving, especially players who are facing up to their worst season in a number of years in France, players performing well below where they were last year, and players who liked the previous manager. You need to go in there and not worry about your perception to all of those players. And has he got it in him? I'm not so sure. He's certainly not seen it.
Yeah, I just hope we don't have another Philip Neville situation, you know, leaving the couch, going for a so-called coaching career and realising after a couple of months, you know, the heat's a little bit hot in the kitchen. So we wish him the best, but I still think too much of a bold move at this stage of his career, Tom.
Right, we'll have more on that one in just a little while. If you'd like to share your thoughts, you can do that now. You can text us on 4001. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more live sport for you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.